Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. You got me, bud? To the podcast. Absolutely. Can you hear me? Everything's good? Okay.
I'm going to give you a second on this. We'll see what goes on here. That is weird. It's like we just did our entire show planning meeting with no problems. And as soon as we hit live, it went nuts. All right. Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott back here again on the Nolcast. All right. It seemed like maybe okay there.
Yeah. I'm going to leave and come back in. Let me just look.
No, I think you're good. Am I laggy to you now?
Yeah, but I'm sorry, y'all. I'm hardwired, but it was getting a message about my internet, which doesn't make any sense to me. So I don't know what happened there. I know in an hour or two, Atlanta is supposed to have some tornadoes and stuff, but we don't have any inclement weather right now. So I'm legitimate confused as to what just happened. Apologies. Now that we're 2 minutes into a podcast, we'll jump into it. And, yeah, man, a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Excited. I was on vacation for a second there, but great to be back, and we'll jump into it, and hopefully this gets a little bit more normal as we go through the podcast.
Cool, man. So two things. Beard looking good. Good looking trim on that. How was New Zealand? Like, that's a pretty dope honeymoon.
New Zealand was wild. It was a trip that my mom in particular had wanted to make for 3 or 4 years, and my mom's probably like the most healthy 75-year-old woman in the world, but you just don't know, you know, you just want to, you should do things like that with your parents while they can and when they can. And it was a great trip, and it's a long flight over. But the South Island in particular, New Zealand, is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And it was an awesome time. Really was. So great to be back.
Nice, man. All right. Just question from the live chat here. Can we discuss the supposed weight gain by quarterback DJU?
I saw that. I saw that right before the web, before our, servers went all wild.
Do you want to take this? You want me to take this? How do you want to handle this?
Yeah. So I think he was listed at 254 or whatever, or, you know, you hear different things about guys weight or when they came in on a visit or whatever. I'm of the opinion that should have a negative dash in front of that number. I think DJU's lost weight, perhaps a decent amount of weight, since he's been on campus and in the system. And I do not believe he's plus any pounds. I'll put it that way.
Completely concur. Yes. Like, look at the photos of when he came to visit and look at him now. Like, that dude has lost several pounds per month that he's been on campus. Like, maybe a pound a week. I think is probably... probably fair, which is a good thing, right? You don't really want a 265, 268, 270 pound quarterback. Like, it's cool that he's, maybe doing well in a short yardage type thing, and be that bulldozer type deal. But you do need the guy to be able to, like, move around in the pocket, avoid sacks, that type of stuff. So mm-hmm. a little lighter is better. I mean, I don't know what's ideal for him, but it's probably... it's probably something in the 240s, to be honest, if we're talking about, like, absolute ideal weight. So I would imagine he'll probably continue to cut some in the summer.
Yeah. I bumped into him happenstance a couple months ago, saw him recently. That's a dude, just by looking at his face and, his shoulders, I think that's a dude that's probably lost about 12 pounds, 13 pounds or so in that period of time. Just, I saw him. And if you walk in Josh Storm's weight room, you're going to go through some type of transformation. And I can only imagine that he's having a positive impact there as well. So
Storms is a hell of an asset for this program, man. I mean, just the way that, current players and the former players really speak about him, the way that, like, former players, when they get back in town, they try to go for a workout like that. I think that's the sign of a really good, strength staff. And yeah, the guy leading that, I mean, it's nice.
Of the things that I think I've learned more about the program since my a little bit more deeper involvement, Josh Storms is at the top of the list for me. Not just that he's really knowledgeable in his craft, but not a guy who I think you win over his favor very easily, but like when you do, he gets behind you and he's on your side. And I think, you know, I've said it for 6 months, 8 months now. I think Florida State legitimate has a top five, top three strength and conditioning coach in the country. And that's also credit to Mike for, you know, seeing what that guy could be at Memphis and letting him go about his kind of path to turning into the coach that he has. They're a great pairing, and Storms has a large imprint on this program in a multitude of ways.
If I think about like the strength coaches that I just consistently think will get good results, right? The dude at NC State who I like super reliable. NC State is just routinely overperforming their recruiting rankings just by what they do with their strength conditioning. The guy who was at Michigan did some ridiculous stuff over the last 24 months. He's now with the Chargers, so he's out. I feel like Georgia has a pretty good job. Like they do get a lot of freaks in the door, but they also generally, you know, do a pretty good job with them. Storms, I think, has to be right up there, man.
Yeah, Storms is right there. The kind of the gold standard in the field for 20 or 30 years was Tommy Moffitt, frequently at LSU. He has a whole kind of strength and conditioning tree that has a lot of different branches on it. That was the tree that Vic Villaloria was off of. For some of the comments in the chat there, Jimbo's guy. I think Storms is a very good coach who, when it's not April and it's that window between April and when, you know, fall practice actually starts, he's as influential as anybody in the program, with the exception of probably the head coach, just for my personal opinion. So
Bill in the chat said, is Storms under Norvell better than it was during Jimbo's years, which was Vic Villaloria? I think Villaloria had a much, not in all cases, but I would say in most cases, had a higher ceiling of athlete with which to work, right? You know, having an Eddie Goldman, right? You know, having a Timmy Jernigan, having some of those, you know, dudes who are just crazy freaks out of high school and getting to work with them for 4 years. You know, Storms in many cases is taking a guy who has not been in the program for 4 years, who has been in somebody else's program for 2 years and improving upon that, you know, quite a bit. I do think that Storms is probably better. Now, look, Vic did a hell of a job getting that thing turned around in a big way. It was also in a disrepair in the final years of Bowden in a way that it was not. Like, Taggart obviously had a disastrous run at FSU, right? And the last couple years of Jimbo were pretty bad. But they were not that far behind as far as strength conditioning stuff as they were in, like, the final 4 or 5 years of Bowden. I mean, look at that 2009 defense they're running out there. Like, those guys are just tiny. And like we're big Everett Dawkins stands here on this show, but I mean, dude, come on, like that. So I think Vic, in some ways, was able to have those overnight results,
Edoc was the green shoots of progress. I mean, Everett was an improvement over what was what had been run out there. You think about,
and he did get Ant McLeod down to a playable weight like that. That does deserve some credit. So. Okay, so these jokes in the chat we cannot share on air, but they are noted.
Can't share. I'll do a little shameless plugging here, bud. I will. I'll be changing up the background here for the Nolcast. I went to the website that I just put in chat, collectibleexchange.com. You can go to, or you can just Google, you know, Doak Campbell Stadium items for sale or whatever. Anyways, the Battle's End. Florida State's Collective and the Collectible Exchange partnered on series of items that were salvaged during the reconstruction of the west side of the stadium there. And I bought a sign at full retail. There was no discount to be given, but I bought a section sign, which is awesome and massive. And it's going to take a little bit of wall space up here, so we'll move things around. Honestly, the response to it was larger than any of us anticipated. The only things that are left, I think, are a couple bleachers individual seats and stadium bricks. So the stadium bricks are really cool thing and something I have on order as well. But if you want a way to support the future of Florida State football by supporting the Battles End while also having a pretty nice piece of its past, I have put the link in the chat there.
Let me ask you a question. What is the weirdest thing that you're like, I cannot believe somebody bought this and paid what they paid for it?
Somebody just repurposed some Ace of Base lyrics there in the chat and made me laugh. Yeah, I mean, like the fact that like the exit signs were gone within an hour surprised me. We probably, you know, like we salvaged all this stuff like a month ago. Trust me, I loved when I made the announcement. People were like, I'm looking on the live cam and I don't see anything that's available. I don't know what they're going to try to sell. Like, yeah, there is some forethought that goes into stuff. It's not as though I'm just scrounging around the bottom of the stadium trying to knock bricks out of the wall to sell or something like that. But yeah, maybe we should have tried to grab just everything that was ever bolted to a wall or something. I don't know, because it flew. I mean, it was gone. Most of the stuff was gone within a 2 to 4 hour window.
Can you confirm or deny the rumor that you guys are going to have a special auction at a later date for the Spirit Spear?
No, oh, yes, yes, no. We will have a special auction that we'll have a more broader announcement tomorrow as far as some things that are be the Friday night before the spring game. Got a big special guest there who will be appearing, who may be the head coach of Florida State's football team or not, but gonna have an online element to that, and we'll have some things for sale and silent auction, etc. Again, a formal announcement will be made tomorrow, the 3rd of April, but I can go ahead and set expectations that we will not have the long sought spirit stick there. And if we do, I will update that, because that thing will go, and that will that would be a boon that would be a boon to the Battles End bank account, I can only imagine. So yeah,
we should get some made to like check our levels on the show every week.
Oh, that'd be great. It's a good idea. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Always a good idea is to check out the legendary team. Chad does such a tremendous job. I believe we have like 7 new loans in progress. And we met with him the other day. I will say, like, the one thing that really kind of struck me from that meeting, and Chad's always got a lot of really good ideas. He was showing us how, if you go through some of these other mortgage sites, that they're basically pricing in purchasing 1.5 or 2 points to their rate. And they don't really show you like the upfront fees on it. And he's like, we just don't do that. Like, we don't want to waste people's time, have them get to the end of a conversation, and then like, oh yeah, by the way, here's 2 points that you got to buy for upfront cost. So what you see is what you get. It's why more than 500 Nolcast listeners have decided to get a loan through the legendary team. And 844-FSU-LOAN is that number to call. 844-FSU-LOAN. What movie is it? The guy's like, I'm not in the business of wasting my own time. I feel like that line is pretty apt here.
No, it is apt. I'm blanking on the movie, but it is just, it's awesome to talk to Chad at any point in time, because it's great to see people doing like that of what they're hyper passionate about. And it does, yes, doesn't take more than 5 or 7 minutes to talk to Chad and be like, yeah, we're like 4 screens deep in this phone conversation, and this is, you know, I can tell that you absolutely love this stuff. And
he is like nerding out on it, like hardcore. He's like, bro, check this out. Like, this is amazing.
It's good stuff, man. It is.
Oh gosh. All right. Spring practice has been weird, not in a bad way, but just in because FSU scrimmaged so soon after the pads first came on. Like, that's not really normal to only have a couple padded practices and just boom, right into the first scrimmage. I get why Mike Norvell did it. I think it's probably smart when you have as many new pieces as they do to kind of throw them all in the fire immediately and say, okay, like, first, let's, as coaches, see what we have. You as players, let's see all the room you still have to improve, right? Like, just because it's the helmet's Florida State doesn't mean that it's automatic. Norvell said that the defense won the scrimmage. He did say today that upon reviewing the quarterback play, he was more pleased than he was at the time. So that is, of course, a good sign. Quarterback, kind of an important position. But I wanted to throw this and just sort of a little recall and then review. We did, I think we said 10, but I think we finished with eight. Eight things we wanted to know from spring. Can we answer any of these so far? Do we have a different opinion on any of these so far? So I'll just kind of go through these and we'll just chat about it. And then I do have some hilarious stuff for the end of the show, which we've already laughed about once, but I'm going to cackle again about it because some of this stuff is amazing. And then I kind of want to see if we can apply any of that to the Noles. Let me see. Honestly, on the recruiting talk, I don't think it's a great year for the state of Florida. You know, I just speaking frankly here, I think it's a fairly down year for the state of Florida. I thought last year was a pretty strong year. So I'm fully on board with FSU being more involved in Georgia this year than maybe in prior years. All right. So spring questions. Let's see if we have any new answers after, you know, seeing practice and talking to our sources. Can DJU shut the door on the competition and take the thing by, you know, by the horns, essentially? I think I'm unchanged on this. Like, I know they've been happy with Brock, but I think they've also been relatively happy with what they've seen from DJ. And I don't get the vibe that they're going to fix, quote unquote, DJ. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't think that's what they brought him in to do. Now, of course, you're going to coach him. You're going to try to improve him. Every player tries to get better every year. But I think they looked at DJ as like, it's a one-year rental. We understand what he does well. We understand the things that he doesn't do well. And there certainly are some of those, because given his arm strength, like if he didn't have serious other flaws in his game, he would be in the NFL, right? So there's areas he can improve. I think they will try to improve them, but I don't think they looked at him as like a reclamation project. Like he's sort of a ready-made thing that they're going to try to minimize the negatives and emphasize the positives. So I'm pretty unchanged on this. Like I would say there's, what did you say? I think you said like 5% chance that Brock will win the job. I'm trying to remember what we said, but
I don't think play has shut the door, but I do think that there's a firm understanding as to who your quarterback's going to be. Okay. You know, like if that makes sense. And I think, look, DJ has physical traits that are super impressive. I mean, he was one of the highest ever rated recruits for a reason. And DJ does produce some moments in practice that just make you stop and be like, yeah, you are, you know, 250 pounds and can throw the ball 70 yards and, you know, at times put it within a 3 foot square window. I think, and look, it's this is a fun time for every program because you get to see raw potential and you get to see certain little flashes of plays and try to extrapolate as to what that's going to look like in 6 months and try to figure out what that might look in, you know, 16 or 26 months on a real young kid. But I do think that DJ's skill set is uniquely designed to what you want this year's offense to look like. And I continue to be ultimately really optimistic as to what the end product is going to be from what this offense is and ultimately what it's going to look like from DJU.
So completely agree. I think you largely worked your transfer stuff around the assumption that you would get a quarterback who was at least as good as DJU as far as throwing the ball. A lot of deep shots. I think that it's reasonable to expect like the down-to-down consistency to go down. Jordan, I think, was a more accurate passer than DJ was. DJ has a far stronger arm than Jordan did. Jordan's a lot more mobile than DJ. It's not DJ's a total statue, but he's not he's somebody who can be an effective runner. I don't know that he's somebody who defenses are like super scared of as a runner, at least not as far as like hitting explosive runs. But yeah, I think that they can make this work and accomplish, you know, their goals that they have for this year with that. It's just going to probably be almost certainly a higher run rate than you were last year. So I do think they're going to try to run the ball a whole lot. think they like their backfield,
which we'll get there in a second, but it fits personnel and it fits where you may be, where you have a chance to be, I think, particularly good this year. I also think, and this is a small, like we're speaking 95% of the same language. I think even like, let's say you would have pulled the coaches. let's say you didn't have to worry about a moronic, stupid decision being made Sunday morning immediately after the ACC game. And you just had breakfast with the coaches and you could be like, separate the emotion of each game and everything that transpired. Like, what would you want to do better this year than what you could do, whether it be either based off personnel or injuries that occurred to personnel throughout? I'm basically trying to say the conversation you would have before you ever thought as to who your quarterback for next year could be. I think they would have told you that we want to be able to be much more dynamic in stretching the field, and we want to put pressure on a defense based off some straight line speed that at times we lacked significantly. So, and that skill set is pairs with what DJ can do in a very unique way. And that's where my optimism stems from.
Completely. I think there will be a lot of like hard play action. Your guy tries to run by their guy. You lay it out there for him, you know, or hard play action. They understand you're trying to run by them. It's deep comebacks, it's those deep in cuts. It's the stuff that really, because they're respecting your speed, you can run other stuff. I don't think they're going to be asking DJ to like work through five different reads a whole lot, which is almost no quarterback does anyway, and be like a super precise passer. Now, the better defenses you face will try to force him to do that, of course, because they have 4 years of film on him, plus whatever they'll have against him by the time they play. But again, I just keep going back to conversations I've had with sources. I think that they knew what they were getting, or at least they thought they knew what they were getting. And I think they're pleased with what they have overall. So to me, like that feels good. Who is going to emerge as like the most important leader to this team was a question we had. Like after 1 week of practice, I think AZ is challenging guys a whole heck of a lot, right? You know, and really, you know, really being a little more vocal about it for a guy who's not always crazy vocal. I don't know if Pat, like, that's one I think we kind of have to wait, wait a little on just to see kind of how it emerges. Because I think your real leaders kind of come out of spring and they show up over summer in the player-led practices.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody you've heard about that you feel like, hey, behind the scenes now is really stepping up as a leader?
I mean, I have to stop myself from coming on this podcast and being highly optimistic about AZ Thomas, okay? Like, I think the world of the kid, I think the sky's the limit, okay? Also, if there was a name that I could have added that conversation, quite different type of leader, but quiet kid and a hard worker and does everything, and I think can be a really unique aspect of this offense, I should have added Toa Philly as well. Not like a flashy in your face type. Mo Smith was the number one guy out of my mouth for the comment in the chat there. But going back to last week, if I could have added a name, Toa would be right there.
All right. Number three. How hopeful are we about minimizing the drop-off with the pass catchers?
Yeah, I mean, you really have to divide this. Is it August and September? Is it pre-Pitt Keon Coleman or is it post-Pitt Keon Coleman? Okay, there's a pretty clear definition there. And Johnny, when he was healthy, Johnny was probably better than he was the year before. I mean, I thought there were times where Johnny was brilliant last year. But you know, Johnny dealt with challenges as well. I do think that the wide receivers can be good in their own way. I think Hakeem is a future star. I think Hakeem's probably a future first round top 40 pick. Assuming things continue to trend in the direction they are. Ja'Kai Douglas is a really solid piece that you're going to continue to work in. Can you, not necessarily a wide receiver traditionally, but what kind of looks can you work for Jalen Lucas? Because if you get a matchup there, you can change the scoreboard. Dustin Hill is a guy who, again, was one of your higher options last year until he got dinged up. And I mean, it all really seemed to transpire between that window of what the Duke and the Pitt game. He lost, he had an injury to almost every significant wide receiver. But I think Destin, there's a lot there. And then, you know, if Kentron is a guy that emerges, then I think you've got some really unique complementary pieces that you're all adding to a guy that I've been sky high on from the time that he signed his papers to come over. Malik Benson's a special dude. And Malik Benson is not, I'm not saying that Malik Benson's going to be better than Keon Coleman. I'm specifically not saying that. But I think you can find dynamic ways to use Malik Benson that can replicate some pretty unique production numbers.
We were kind of reminiscing today on the phone, and I thought you had brought up a good point. Like, Norvell has done a nice job in his career of, just like we talked about with DJU, understanding like what a player is and is not, and trying to call plays for players as opposed to just call plays. What I mean by that is, like, yes, you want to develop the whole player and you want to have them be good at everything, but he's not averse to playing a younger guy and just having that guy do the thing he does well and putting that into the offense. Now, you can't have an offense where all five of your options are just gadget guys, because that's not going to work. You have to have at least some dudes from whom the defense has to respect a potential variety of routes to be run. But I mean, if Benson is just Pokey Wilson, okay, which would be a lot better than he was last year at Alabama. Like, the numbers at Alabama are extremely concerning. However, there are a lot of factors with Alabama that make me think, okay, like, it wasn't just Malik. One, he was blocked out by a better player in Isaiah Bond, who's now at Texas and apparently doing really well at Texas. And Bond's probably like a top 100 pick, I would have to guess, given I think he had the top like on-field GPS score of anybody in the country last year, according to one thing I saw. So, all right, you're the speed guy, but Bama already has a speed guy who's a little bit better than you, who's now at Texas. Like, Sark's probably going to just spam the hell out of that. Also, Jermaine Burton had, like, the highest uncatchable rate of targets. Mm-hmm. So he was their other receiver. I think throwing the ball, I do think that DJ is somewhat better than Milton, or than Milroe, excuse me. Definitely better than Milton, by the way, the Tennessee kid. Although I don't know if DJ can throw it 90 yards.
Can he throw it 90? That's the question that you got to ask yourself. That happened. You ask that a lot in the process of a game.
But I also think that there will. I've done this job a long time, man, and receiver by committee is not a good sign. I'll say that. Like, I do want to see somebody or maybe two guys step up to where they're clearly pulling away. Because, like, teams that have really good passing attacks, they don't have five receivers who are all, like, that level, okay? I mean, there's been, like, one 2019 LSU in kind of in history, you know, where they had three dudes who were like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. So I do, like, to buy into this more, I do need Benson to, like, show up and be dominant in practice, or Hakeem to take that next step over the next 4 months, like something like that. I need you. You'd much rather have one mega stud and two just kind of average dudes than three decents. Mm. Unless your quarterback's like Tom Brady and he's always getting through all his reads and always finding the open guy, which they don't have. Like, that's not what they have. So I would rather have a defined go-to guy. But I do think Mike can scheme around this some, to your point earlier. Like, I think that's really smart that they tried to match what they did in the portal, you know, speed, 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 with a guy who does have a big time arm. So I'm excited about that. It's a drop off to me. But I don't know that it has to be enormous because of, like, what you said with, you know, post injury Keon.
So if the team is going to be better, and if the team is going to be particularly successful in making, you know, like why are all the, why are all the play action throws that you just talked about 5 minutes potentially open, and why do they suit this offense well? Well, because I think you have a chance to be legitimately dynamic in the run game, and I think your offensive line strength, you know, I don't know that that Mo's ever going to be a road grader, but Mo is really good at getting in good positions immediately off the snap and setting lanes and setting angles for running backs. And other than that, I think most of these guys, strength is going to be in run blocking. Ultimately, I think you brought in two guards in the portal that are dynamic wherever it is that you ask of Darius, pretty good at both run and pass, but I think it's going to be a plus level offensive tackle for you this year, assuming that's where he lands. And then you'll have, Rob Scott and Jeremiah and those guys that ultimately sort themselves out at tackles. I don't think it's a stretch, man. In fact, I'm more confident that if you want a position group that you can look at and say, where are you going to be better?
Let's go to this. Good question.
You should expect to be better at the offensive line. And we kind of talked about this a week ago or 10 days ago, whenever it was that we did the international version of the pod. I mean, I think the world of Dimitri Emmanuel and was a good player, but I think you can get a player to his level relatively quickly. I think you can perform at a higher level than the Colorado transfer that slips my mind right now. I'm sorry, no respect to him, but
Roddick.
Yeah, than Casey Roddick. I think you got a really nice piece coming in from Gainesville. I think Richard Leonard's going to be liked by this fan base a good bit. I think Ferguson will be a really solid player as well. And I think you can look at yourself in the mirror and say that you're not just letting wild fan optimism get you if you think that you can be better along the offensive line than you were last year.
I think so too. I'm kind of excited about Roydell in sort of a like dependable type way, right? Is he Trey Benson athletically? He is not. Could he be somewhere between Trey Benson and Trayshawn Ward as far as, vision and whatnot? I think that is possible. He's also a guy that, like, Bama people said they loved how he passed, loved how dependable he was in pass pro. We'll have to see how well he can catch the ball in games. Yep. But, like, that's a guy that I think is going to play a lot of ball because of those abilities. So I am excited about that. And I think you're spot on, man, as far as the offensive line. Like, that's the one position that I think legitimately could be better. I mean, receiver, I would say some shot, but low shot. You would need, like, a Hakeem and Benson to hit their, like, 95th percentile projections and hit it quick. Mm-hmm. Because you did have two dudes who – even injured, we're still winning one-on-ones, like consistently, mm-hmm. in Keon, yep. and Johnny. Running back, I think it's unlikely that we're better, but it doesn't have to be a huge drop off from the performance.
I don't think you're going to be better. I'm almost certainly you're not going to be physically better. I mean, Trey, just look at his numbers. Look at the combine. Trey is a physical dude that you just don't see. It is a dude that's 220 pounds and runs a 4.39 or whatever. You don't find those all the time. But, for the home runs that Trey hit, I also think there were a lot of 8 to 10 to 12 yard runs that were left out on the field just because of things that either weren't seen or maybe weren't run exactly as the play was asked. So I'm not saying that you're going to upgrade from Benson the specimen. In fact, quite honestly, you won't. I do think you've got a pretty special freshman on your roster, too. And you'll find ways to work him into the game plan as the season goes on. And, Cam Davis, I'm not saying remember the name because you guys, if you listen to a podcast like this, you're familiar with Cam. But that's a guy that's going to work for carries. And I'll tell you a name that there's some positive buzz around is Singleton as well right now. I will qualify this, though. It's hard. Running back is a position that you can skew your expectations and ideas to what a player is and ultimately the role that he'll have in the offense because just selective matchups. Again, you see traits there that you think will extrapolate immediately. And so there were times last year in spring where I think Rodney Hill looked like the best running back on the roster. Okay. Better than Benson. I'm not forgetting Trey. I'm saying he looked like he was the best player on the roster and it just didn't translate to that in season. You know, Rodney had flashes, great dude runs, you know, he's a guy that's like 5'9", 190, and occasionally runs like he's 6'1", 230 and runs over SEC defenders. And there's great moments, but that spring ball level of Rodney, you didn't see in season. So I'm always running back and linebacker are two positions in spring that I think you need to put a particularly high filter on, because there's elements of spring for those position groups in particular that I think can skew expectations and people can overperform a little bit higher than maybe where you think they're going to be.
I think that's really well said. I mean, Jalen Lucas, by the way, is a guy who they're going to find ways to get touches. Clearly, like, the main point of bringing him in was special teams, because I think he does solve your returner stuff. But I think he's so dynamic with the ball in his hands, and this is going to be kind of a shot play offense through the passing game, that they're going to find ways to try to design him some touches, which is welcome, because he really is – once he's got the ball in his hands, he's tough to bring down, man. Like, he's
got a different gear, and he gets there quick. Yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of grasping at some air. Shoot, and like, we didn't even mention a guy like you know, Kazai Holmes, and certainly like Toa Philly's a dude they trust an awful lot, and Toa Philly will play.
I can't wait to see what they do with Toa, because I think you're going to use him a lot in the pass game. I'm real interested in to see how they use the tight ends and the numbers they use at tight end, because I think you've got a lot of different dynamic names at running back that you're going to want to try to get involved. And I think your comment about you need a big one or two, maybe not a group of five at wide receiver. But I still think you're going to have four or five real quality names, and maybe not one pure, you know, absolute wide receiver one. Now, maybe Hakeem's that by the end of the year. I'm curious some of the sets that you see and how they try to incorporate that. Basically, I'm saying maybe you use a tight end a little bit less than what you plan on, just because you want to get a Toa and a Roydell in the backfield at the same time, and you want to motion Toa. You want to try to create opportunities for him, because that's a kid who has also put on some good serious weight, to circle back to the first, you know, 90 seconds of the pod. And I don't think his role in the offense is going to diminish by any means.
And tight end is it's entirely possible that Kyle Morlock takes a jump as far as comfort with the game, pass catching and whatnot in year two. I mean, that was a huge jump. He came from shorter college, right? Yeah, not college.
Yeah, no, shorter. Well, yeah, whatever. I don't know if they have postgraduate degrees up there in Rome, but yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's shorter college.
It wasn't even FCS, right? Like, it was like legit, like D2 type ball. So, I mean, that's a huge, huge jump in the quality of competition. And for a while last year, he certainly was swimming. Now, can his blocking take a massive, massive jump? Because that's the kind of jump it would need to take. His jumping or his blocking last year was kind of below replacement level. And indeed, at times they did replace him because of the blocking and just put in a guy, even a walk-on at times, just to come in and block. And it wasn't like Bell was a great blocker either. So that was part of your run game problems last year, was your tight ends were not really not only were they not moving people, but they often didn't just get in the way of somebody, which you would kind of need. Jackson West is sort of your other option there, but he has very notable issues catching the football. Like, the hands have been an issue for multiple years, and maybe not the most natural and fluid route runner, but he will kind of stick his nose in there a little bit. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you're right. Like, we don't have a well-rounded tight end stud on this team. All these tight ends have some, maybe not major flaw, but like serious questions about it. Like, obviously they have a highly rated freshman come in, but he's pretty tiny and is probably, you know, pass catcher only type guy at this point, if he can get in the lineup. So yeah, we'll see what they do there at that position. Let me see.
What you should do in your position is call Matt Lewis. Reach out to my friend Matt anytime you're looking for that extra help that can push your company's operations over the top there. Matt's been great for many Seminole affiliated businesses, including multiple ones that I've been associated with. Just a true asset to your business. And, you know, I professionally talk with Matt about 3 or 4 times a month right now, and better for it. So congruityhr.com is the website. I believe it's congruityhr.com/Knowles for the specific webpage that has been created as a reflection of this podcasting relationship. And a big thanks to Matt and his team. And let me stress again, they're great people to work with, and we'll only do good things for you and your business.
All right, so defensively here, does this team have a star pass rusher? That was a question we had.
Yes, they do. Believe Pat Payton is going to be a star. I believe Pat Payton is, and look, for a podcast that got banged on for more than a decade about, oh, these guys are negative. Well, it was a rough time. Okay. Program wasn't in a great place and conversation was accurately negative. I don't want to be like the minister of propaganda here or something, but I think Pat Payton's making the jump. I think Pat Payton is doing what you would want a guy to do in this position as far as his approach in the weight room, continued transformation of body. I don't know that Pat's going to be like a, like a 13 sack guy or something like that. But I think that his game is continuing to go to another level. And I think that you've got numbers at defensive tackle or defensive end that are going to just going to be there as far as depth and rotation. I really like everything that I've heard about Lolo Lahela, the kid from Oregon State there. Tommy, the kid from West Virginia, I think is dynamic. You can use him inside in particular positions. I think he will take a year. I think he'll contribute and he'll make plays this year, but I think his real splash year is next year. But I think with number 11, you've got a guy there, and then you can rotate Jones Jr., Tommy, and let's just say maybe Sione is the other starter. But you'll have a rotation 4 deep there that this conference just can't block over the course of a game. I do think that you'll see pretty impressive production numbers from the ends. And I look forward to going back and looking at it and seeing how much it spikes in the second half, because I do think it's a little bit of a war of attrition. And I think you're going to be really good on the interior defensive line that is going to free up opportunities for those guys on the edge to have favorable matchups and favorable numbers.
I think I agree with that. Like, do I think that Payton will be what Verse was?
Don't think that's a fair expectation. I'm not saying you know that, but I mean, like, that's Jared's going to be a top 20 pick. I just don't think that's what you should expect your defensive ends to be, or what anybody would have expected that Pat Payton would be. You know,
I'm going to read this off because I think this exercise is instructive. So ESPN put out their top 10 pass rushers list for college football returning. Which of these guys would you actually trade Pat Payton for? All right, James Pierce, number 1, Tennessee, I would. Like, the only reason that guy's not like high first round right now is because he's not eligible because he was a sophomore last year. All right, that's the number 1 guy. Ashton Jalot at Louisville, I don't know that I would trade Pat Payton for him, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's the number 2, but I kind of think Payton has, like, and that guy's a damn good player, but I don't know. I think Payton has a higher ceiling. Mm-hmm. Like, Trey Moore at Texas, I think, is an awesome get for them in the portal from UTSA. But, I mean, again, it was – and he's won Conference USA Player of the Year honors twice. So, like, that's a pretty damn good job for – that guy clearly belonged in a Power 5, and it was a great – but I don't know, man. And he is killing it, apparently, for Texas, and Texas has a nails offensive line. So, like, maybe he's on that level. Like, Jack Sawyer, Ohio State, nice year last year, 6.5 sacks, 10 TFL. Okay, Reuben Bain for Miami, like, obviously he's got 2 years to play, and Pat probably just has 1. They're both pretty high-impact guys. Cam Rucker from North Carolina, I kind of think I'd rather have Pat Payton, man. I mean, maybe that's not – maybe we'll get well, actually, and this will get clipped, and this looks like we're going to be dumbasses, but – I mean, if Payton is putting in the work that they're saying he's putting in, then I'm willing to buy into that, because that was kind of one of the questions, you know. Harold Perkins at LSU, I guess if you guarantee me you're getting like the October of 2022 version of Harold Perkins, like nobody can turn that down, but he didn't play like that the rest of the year. Now JTT at Ohio State is a pretty unique player. I mean, that's a different kind of end. Princely, who transferred from Florida Ole Miss, like, I think I'd rather have Pat Payton than Princely, to be honest. Not much hesitation there. Antoine Powell Ryland, who transferred from UF to Virginia Tech. Again, I think I'd rather have Pat Payton. Those are good players. But on that list, there's like maybe two that I would just snap call rather have than Pat Payton. So, I mean, that's a pretty high praise. You know, I think. And really, Pierce is the only one where it's like there's no doubt. I mean, it is what it is. The guy's a freak. Chat wants to know, will UF produce the first 500-pound player? I would say, should we? I don't know. At some point, that turns into making fun of somebody with an eating disorder. So or a glandular issue, or both. So I don't know. We shouldn't probably continue with that, but I 500-pound nose guard is something different. I agree, by the way, on the interior D line, like the starters probably being real high impact. I did take note today. Norvell took the time to praise KJ Sampson.
Yep.
And to me, that's important because I think Sampson, they think Lions can come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they feel relatively confident that Lions is going to have a similar year to what Josh Farmer had last year. Maybe. We'll see. Farmer made a big jump and played better than I think people thought they were going to. Sampson's been there, man. Sampson is a, ultimately you judge defense tackles by their performance and stuff. But I can tell you, like, Sampson is a very smart individual and very driven, and that kid gets, quote unquote, gets it. And I think there's some bright things in his future. Absolutely.
All right. Last two questions here that we had, and then we'll get some more fun stuff. Is Earl Little that guy at nickel?
Yeah. I had a one word answer for this last time, and my one word answer is not changing. I'm very optimistic about what that looks like. And I say that with the full idea that Jarian Jones is a better player than I ever thought he was going to be, and was one of the better nickels in all of CFB last year.
The only person who thought Jarian Jones was going to be that good was Jarian Jones. Mm-hmm. And I think he thought that even when he wasn't good. Like, Jarian Jones' self-confidence is freaking amazing, man. You got to love the guy for that. He had a special, special year.
He's one of the kids I've gotten to know the most through NIL, and I can tell you that is a great dude who I've been fortunate to get to know and personally think the world of. And I don't know that I've ever misjudged a kid more than I have Mr. Jones. So I will remember that for a long time, and excited to see what his Sunday prospects look like.
The one note I would add here is that while I do think Little is that guy at nickel, I don't think they're going to the portal for more DBs. I really feel like they feel like they have a very high hit rate over the last two classes at the high school level for what they've done there with the defensive backfield. And that's something you got to feel pretty good about. It's not like Little's that guy because everybody else can't suck or because they suck. Like, they got some guys who are developing who I think they feel really good about in the short and especially in the long term. So just what does FSU have at linebacker? We have any new answers on this? I guess Lundy is the top so far. Let's transition and Cryer, I guess. Let's just say this is not one of the positions to me that we would have brought up as like which position could be better than last year. Like, it's probably not going to be better than last year. You had two super, super veteran guys there who were very productive and good players for you, especially at the college level.
I think Tatum Bethune's level of play is a little underappreciated, and you're going to miss Tatum and Kalen, absolutely. So
all right, this just kind of dovetails into this question.
No, I just good dudes. DJ Lundy, really good player in his own right. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, who emerges as those second and third names at that position.
All right. I wanted to run this by you. Which guys at the, like, which transfer so far do we think, and this is, it is still kind of early, which transfers are in your mind, like, no doubt hits based on what we've seen so far for the role for which they were brought in to be? For instance, like, we're not grading Grady Kelly on a, like, can you be a superstar ACC D tackle? Like, the guy was brought in to be, you know, depth purposes.
He was brought in to play a very similar role to what Malcolm Ray played last year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So,
Marvin Jones, for me, I'm going to say too early to tell.
Like what I hear, but early to tell. Yeah. Exit polls are favorable if we're putting into the political discussion, but we'll wait for official returns.
I think exit poll over last week for me is ticking up. Early on, I was like, unsure about the data. Erlittle, yes, obviously, for me, that's kind of no doubter.
Brown, yes. Brown has been very positive.
I think so, yeah. Too. Because they're not dependent on him to come in and be like a super stud starter immediately. Jalen Lucas, no doubt for the role that they're bringing him in for. Devontae Brown, I think this kind of depends on how you evaluate it, but like for me, that was a let's bring in somebody with some experience into the room, just be like a good depth veteran. So I'm going to say yes, I think, but...
Yeah, just for purposes of full transparency, the places on the field that I just don't know there that I haven't seen a whole lot are safety and linebacker. So I'm going to have a hard time judging the spine of the defense. That'll change a little bit in the next week or so here, but to be determined there.
Malik Benson?
Yes.
Yes. Like everybody in that program hypes him up like crazy. So they, yeah. DJ?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Tomey, it's kind of wait and see for me.
For the role, yeah. I mean, Tomey's brought in because they're really excited about what he can be and his explosiveness, but also, you know, he's going to need to work with both Odell and Papuchis, and that's a guy who's going to be in the rotation. We see how much Florida State rotates along the defensive line in particular, but Tomey's breakout year is 25. I don't think you should expect big things in year one. So
do we think FSU knew that? Because like so far the feedback I'm getting is the same as what the Mountaineers gave me, which was like the good is really good, but the bad is like unplayably bad. So like they couldn't rely on him to be a starter there in Morgantown. But like long term, I think they still certainly got it. Like why you would go after a guy like that, because the upside is still there. I think probably because of the number of DNs you took in the, or like D linemen you took in the portal, like you weren't totally relying on him to come in and start.
Yeah, I think so. And this is a staff that leans on its development. If you ask them what they do better, in comparisons across the board, they're going to tell you that they develop kids, and Tomey's a piece that you want in your locker room, and you want to be able to, you want to have the opportunity to try to develop that kid. So, yeah.
Sione, for me, no doubt.
No doubt. No doubt.
TJ Ferguson, I'm going to say too early to tell, kind of wait and see.
I trend towards yes, but yeah.
Roydell to me is yes.
He's a hard yes. Yeah.
Exactly what we thought he was going to be. Richie Leonard, yes.
Yep.
Sean Murphy, pretty hard wait and see. I mean, just on this one, I agree with you about like the linebacker position in general. I'm not real high on most of the linebackers in this room. So I think if you're going to get a guy who's in his third year of college football, coming from Bama, like you expect him to be like I did, at least the best, like kind of the best linebacker in the room by far, and I don't know that he's anywhere close to that right now. But again, you're like a week and a half into practice.
Yeah, so. Just to be TBD here. I'm not gonna lie to you guys, I need to see more things about the middle of the defense before I think I have a better understanding of it.
Some of this stuff's hard to evaluate too, right? Like I know you're going to look at practice tape, but like all of his snaps at Bama were just obvious, like team giving up, quitting into the game type situation. So people can be like, oh, look at how he triggers at the run. Yeah, but we don't have anything from a neutral game state in which he would have to actually honor the pass. These teams, at the very end of the games, they don't really pass the ball a whole lot on like Georgia and Bama because they're just, they don't want you to tee off on their team. They're like, hey, it's white flag waving time. We're gonna run a little counter, you know, we're gonna run stretch and just get out of it. And then Jacob Rizzi, obviously wait and see. So cool, man. Let me see, what else do we have here? Save that because I want to actually think that's a better point for another show. Two notes from around the league around your schedule. One, I was listening to the Through the Smoke podcast by David and Gabby, who I think do a really good job on that show. And David said that he thinks there's a very good chance, I'm paraphrasing him here, but this is essentially the gist, that Cam Ward is the best quarterback since Ken Dorsey in Miami. It's like, whoa, that was back before HGTV. We got to thinking, who is the best quarterback since Cam Dorsey, or since Ken Dorsey right now on that
team? Yeah. I mean, who would he be taking that title from?
I think it's Brad Kaya.
I mean, over the course of the year, too, you can't tell me, like, well, Tyler Van Dyke was good. It was great for six games or something, you know? Like, we had this conversation at noon. I hung up, was able to look for about 5 minutes, and then was able to kind of have it in the back of my mind periodically throughout the game. I think it is Kaya. I do. And Kaya was a, you know, Kaya was a nice football player who I just mentally can't think of without seeing Matthew Thomas hit in a manner that would life probably get you suspended for four games in 2024. But that was a classic back and forth where both teams were trying to kill each other's quarterback. And that was, it's probably not best for all participants involved from a long-term health perspective, but that is a brand of football that is kind of appealing to me in its own unique way. So.
Totally agree. So, probably not a crazy high bar to clear there. I am curious, like, what does Miami look like in terms of their run-pass rate? Because if Ward is as good as suggested, and they're saying their freshman tight end Lofton is like a complete stud and is killing it in camp, so much they're actually using him at running back because Henry Parrish left and their other running backs are hurt and may not be ready for the season. So I 100% anticipate Miami getting one in the portal, although Miami fans on Twitter told me I was an idiot for that when I said it because they hadn't heard the injury situation they had there at running back that I actually had heard about. Miami's going to go to the portal for a back, I would assume, in the spring. And also, if their running game is not that good, does Mario actually let Cam Ward cook if he is that good? Because they didn't really let Justin Herbert cook.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, man. We'll just have to see what, you know, what that level of quarterback play really means. Is it that he's slightly above Brad Kaya? Is it that he's, this super dynamic prospect? There's a reason why he was, pursued as much as he was in the portal. And, there's some great things about Cam Ward's game. And then there's some stuff that he's, got to clean up. And we'll just see what it looks like. But
totally.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that are just wild, blind optimism. I don't think this particular Kane reporter is pretty honest about some of his assessments of the program, particularly recently. And, it's interesting to have in the back of your mind. So, good for Miami.
Other one to note here, and I don't think this probably matters during the season, but it could. So, Riley Leonard, the quarterback that Duke decided to play when he was pretty clearly still, I'm not going to say hurt, but dinged or limited at best.
Yeah, man. We talked a ton about this. Yeah. Look, it's not Duke podcast, whatever.
He had another foot surgery.
Make their decisions. I wouldn't have played that kid in that game because of this exact situation. So,
yeah. So Riley Leonard transferred to Notre Dame, who FSU does play, and he had another foot surgery. This time it was to replace a plate. They're saying there's some chance he comes back to do a little bit of work at some point in spring, but most people who cover the team say that's just not happening. So maybe a summer type thing. Just always worth noting when you got a guy whose number one skill was that he was like basically Anthony Richardson level sack avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having foot surgeries like that. That scares me a little bit.
Yep.
And we've been going like an hour. Matt Miller had a mock draft. A lot of Knowles going pretty high. Jared Verse first round. I think he had Keon at the top of the second. He did have Jordan Travis getting drafted, which is cool. He did have Jaheim Bell getting drafted, which is also good to see. He didn't have Akeem Dent, which I think could possibly happen. I want to see some of these teams if they have a 30 visit. You seen that term now? Like these teams bring in a guy, you get 30 basically on-campus visits to bring in certain prospects. A lot of them are like guys you're thinking about drafting, but maybe aren't like first rounder type guys.
Didn't know that. I will say, just from, you know, the limited amount of NFL people I talked to and some of my previous working in sports radio, still have relationships with some various people around the league. I think Akeem Dent's going to end up getting drafted. I think his stock is rising significantly, and that he's put some raw numbers out there that are going to intrigue some people. And a guy, I put this on Twitter a week ago, 10 days ago, however long it was, a guy that had Florida State made the playoffs, I think really could have elevated his draft stock a lot. If nothing else, not even so much the play that he might have put on tape in those games, just as you looked at that defense and as you looked at the way that Akeem played at the end of the year, played the best ball of his career, and I think would have been much more likely to get invited to, you know, Mobile or some of these other places where you can showcase your talent, and that only would have helped him. So just a random comment on that, a random comment that that Matt Thompson got in his email box a couple of weeks ago.
I thought you were going to talk about the random comment that he had today. That I was like,
you know, not going to go there for my own, He said, yeah, the Knollcast is one of the main podcasts I listen to, and I always hear Ingram talking about the food at Charlie Park, visited for mine and my wife's Valentine's date. And they're so good, we got the same thing around this time. Called a couple hours before, and y'all squeezed us in, even with a wedding party there. Definitely above and beyond, and Charlie Park is now our go-to date spot. So whether you're a local in Tallahassee and it's your favorite date spot, or you're somebody like myself who finds themselves in Tallahassee all the time, for business, or if you're a fan in Orlando or Atlanta or Tampa or whatever and make it to Tallahassee six times a year for football and various other sporting events, I would put Charlie Park on your list. And if you're going to be in town for the spring game, I would highly suggest you go ahead and make reservations now, as that is a popular place, and it fills up particularly on any type of event weekends. But always want to thank the venerable Matt Thompson, Matt Thomas, still in my mind from the Brad Kaya conversation, Matt Thompson, and all the wonderful properties of the For the Table Restaurant Group, Matthew Thomas.
To our knowledge, Matt Thompson has never knocked out a tooth of Brad Kaya.
He didn't, but I did see Matt Thompson sprint 100 yards a couple weeks ago, and that was awesome and good credit for him. So
what do we think, that if you had the stopwatch handy?
It was a respectable performance. Okay. I got to give it to him. He said he'd been doing some biking and some other things leading up to the event, and he went out there and he opened it up, let it go. So
nice, man. Yeah. Oh, T-ball update. We did get our first win.
Dog, you got to start like saving these T-ball write-ups. I love them. They're brilliant and capture the true spirit of. What'd you say about the deleterious impact on your outfield when there was a bunny spotted or something like that?
We had a rabbit. So like there's a lake beyond the outfield. And so the prior week, we only had 9 total fielders and 4 of them had to take a bathroom break at the same time while we're in the field. I'm like, bro, at least, I guess it's better than missing your at bat, but but this time we had no outfield defense for about an inning. And a little bit of the next day until they were sure the rabbit was gone. They just because it was pretty cool. Like, it was a good sized rabbit, you know, by the lake. And I'm like, did a gator get that when we were batting? Because I don't know. It was good. Tonight we tried to work on picking up the third. I ran hitting practice. I did not run the base running practice. Just some of our coaches have a different level of opinion of how good we can be at ages 4 or 5 and, well, 2 6-year-olds. We tried to pick up the third base coach as we rounded first.
Mm. Okay.
I ran the drill where we had somebody stand kind of in front of first base and worked on not stopping and waiting for them to get out of our way and actually going around them. So that's been a frequent issue for us. If there's somebody in the baseline, and when you play 15-man defense because you just put everybody out of the field, there's frequently people in the baseline. So we are working on going around the guys in the baseline. That was really my thing tonight. And also keeping both hands touching on the bat. Like the split, we're coming up on game 7, and as a hitting coach, this does bother me. Like, we still got some guys who are kind of doing the split bat grip, and that's just really not great.
That's so not what you want.
We did get our first win. It was solid. When our kids don't have karate or whatever else, we're definitely not good, but we're not quite as bad as,
right
as
there. The record indicated. So, nice.
Yeah.
I pulled off an unassisted triple play in T-ball, bud, and that was a nice moment. And I was just a kid who grew up watching, you know, Braves baseball every chance that I had, and just understood, you know, the slightest elements of the sport when a lot of kids were, you know, more interested in the rabbits and other things out there. And I thought T-ball was awesome. One of my favorite memories. So glad you're getting to do that.
You know Bull Durham, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they talk about the shower shoes, and like you can't have moldy shower shoes until you're like a total stud and you win 20 games. Like if you're, you know, if you suck and you have moldy shower shoes, you're just a slob.
Mm-hmm.
Had to kind of have that talk with the boy a little bit because he likes to wear like the baseball like douchebag shades that cover like 3/4 of his face. I'm like, bro, you can't wear those and then like be drawing pictures in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
People will be like, uh-huh, you know, that's a little sus.
I'm really slapping around a little bit there before you get to customize your eyewear in the Elliott house. Well, I get it.
All right. Yes, miniature Kitty Powers. Yeah, because he's got a mullet too, so it's great. Let's talk about this Oklahoma thing. This is even more wild than T-ball. I'll just read it. It's from the OU Daily, which is the newspaper of the University of Oklahoma. In his Evans Hall office, Haraz told OU Daily that if the Norman City Council does not approve the proposed $1 billion entertainment district that would feature a new arena for Oklahoma athletics, then the university, alongside donors, would look to other cities to build an arena for which its basketball and women's gymnastics teams could be anchor tenants and possibly the entertainment district as a whole. Quote, I'm very hopeful and do everything I can to keep it here in Norman, Haraz said. But if this isn't approved by the city council for whatever reason, then we're going to be looking at other cities, Oklahoma City, more surrounding areas, and figure out where there's a group that wants to do this. This is like such professional sports behavior. We're relocating the college away from the college kid.
Yeah, man. I don't.
That's the OU president, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not the long-standing athletic director.
Bro.
Can somebody that works in NIL bemoan the professionalization of college sports? I mean, I realize, like, you can slap me in the face and call me a big hypocrite, but do we really need to be threatening to move out of our sports team? Like, how would it work? I mean, look, Florida State's fortunate to have the athletic director that it has, and this would not happen under Michael Alford. But what if Michael Alford's like, you know what, we're going to take baseball and football to Thomasville moving forward because we're just not happy with local city leadership. I doubt that ever happens. It is credit to the Seminole boosters and the people who had the foresight basically what it sounds like to an extent is they want, you know, the two references that you hear a lot. They either want like their own college town or they want their own, you know, the area. If you've been to a game at the Braves Stadium in the last 2 years or so, yes. The whole, yeah, with, I mean, that's, the battery? That's what they want. They want either the battery or a college town type situation or something like that. But are we really? Yeah, I mean, that'd be like having a stadium, you know, a team located in one part of Florida and then having your stadium, you know, 45 minutes away or something like that. That'd be crazy.
Has anybody tried that?
I don't know that it's worked out yet, but yeah, I can't fathom that we're really being like, we're either getting public funding or we're moving stuff out. That's wild.
Also, Oklahoma City literally has a basketball team. They play in this league. You might have heard of it. It's called the NBA. Yeah,
a lot of good players. A lot of good players come to Oklahoma City on a damn near nightly basis as part of the calendar. Yeah, that's
also
crazy.
I'm not trying to be like a dick about this just to be a jerk. There is 0% chance that I would base a business plan on any kind of non-revenue sport. Like women's gymnastics, I think Oklahoma people show up to, and that's great. And mm-hmm. I actually Googled this, and it's a very good women's gymnastics program.
And it'll only get better by going in the SEC, because that is where the highest levels of collegiate gymnastics are found, to my knowledge. But yeah, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
It's wild. Is OU basketball even any good?
No, I don't think they're anything special historically, by any means. But yeah. So what did they say? They'll take basketball and
gymnastics to this new
gymnastics
arena.
Okay.
The other thing is I'm not really familiar enough with the geography of like Norman to Moore, Oklahoma. Oh, it's 10 miles away.
Okay.
There's so still kind of that whole
moving sports to thing. Midway or Quincy. Yeah. I mean, that's, I don't know. Yeah.
Agreed. I don't think that's really, it's real smart. Blake Griffin did play at Oklahoma. So I do recall that back when I watched regular season college basketball. Is there a comparison in your mind of a team that did the football equivalent of NC State?
Trey Young is also a Oklahoma name that pops in my mind while we did that. So, well, it's hard to say because there is just no similar, you know, you can't have a 500 football team that then goes and wins the championship. Yeah. So it's hard to even, I don't even know how to make that comparison. It's for football, you'd almost need to look at it over like a 2 year window or something. And, you know, to an extent, maybe you could say that happened with, I mean, it's not perfect, but Florida State, if you look at them in the last 2 years and, you know, that split that they had and then that run of unbeaten games that ran into that little fictional game that they played down in Miami at the end of last year. Where as far as it took a little while for it to click. And then when it did, you just had this long run of games, but what, they won 9 in a row that have basically all been, you know, must win games for them to continue to play.
Yes.
I don't know how you could have that in football, and I can't come up with anything similar to it.
The only one I really thought of today before I posed this question, it was that 2013 Auburn team, because it was like, okay, it's a bunch of new pieces brought in. Like, they weren't all transfer, but they were a lot of like kind of newish starters. They weren't great at the beginning of the season. They actually suffered a loss as far as like making the playoff or the BCS that year. Everything was do or die after LSU beat them, right? And then just insane skin of their teeth wins in back-to-back weeks against Georgia and Alabama. And then they kind of put it together, and they look kind of, you know, formidable against Missouri there in the SEC title game. And then in the first half, well, they had their signals against the 2013 FSU team, ultimately to lose. So
it's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, it's been good, man. I've enjoyed. Yeah, I'm not gonna cheer for anything too hard that Boo Corgan's associated with just quite yet. It's gonna take me a while to get over, but it's having some family ties to NC State. It's been fun to watch them go on that run. So
I do like that fan base. I agree with you. Boo Corgan is a never.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, man. Let's save the, like, can you explain the pro and con of Big Ten SEC for next episode? Let's save the additional reasons why we're still pissed about the snub for next episode. And let's save, like, the other couple and enjoy this.
Yeah, man. Good to be back. Good to talk for a good 75, 80 minutes here. And seems like we got the connection issues ironed out at the beginning of the pod build, the Norvell film that I mentioned a couple weeks ago. I will grab that. That's something I've been meaning to get. And I've got a couple clips of him playing and we'll add that to the list. So,
by the way, I got more cards.
Oh, yeah.
We will open up some more packs.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's, we'll put that on the list too. That was cool. That was fun to watch.
Awesome, man. All right. We'll see you, buddy.
All right, y'all. Enjoyed it as always. Talk to you soon. It's been another episode of the Nolcast.